Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, reunited, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Oh, not too much, Andrew. You know, it's been a pretty wild couple weeks. I went to see the migratory habitat of the white pelican in Utah. I nearly stepped on a 3-foot-long snake in the middle of Canyonlands National Park. I saw Jesus at Bryce National Park. I mean, that's an unbelievable place. I saw football Jesus Jim Harbaugh on the sideline of Michigan football last weekend.
Oh, no way. Wow. All right.
But none of it compares to what you did. And I think I want to just congratulate you. How does it feel to be a married man?
That's right. As of last weekend, I'm married. It feels good, man. It was an awesome little weekend we had. And I've just been sort of hanging out since then for the last few days. So it's been a nice little stretch for me.
So when did you start regretting the decision?
No regrets so far. Listen, so far my week has been spent like sleeping and riding bikes. I've eaten like 5 meals a day and we've been watching Narcos every night. So married life is just awesome. I recommend it to everybody.
It's super romantic when you just like whisper the words like cocaína to each other in Spanish, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. We are banditos.
That's fantastic.
It's been a good little run, man.
Seriously, congratulations.
I appreciate it. Yeah, we've been away for a while. I've missed our pod time together. You know, the last time we were together, I think I had just gotten back from Rio and could barely speak. You were in the middle of Utah. So that was, I think, a month ago. So it's been a while for us.
And I've literally spent every minute since then writing up blurbs for the top 100 or talking to Rob Mahoney about the top 100. So I think you're winning this month.
Yeah. So let's get into it. You know, it was a... Can you explain the top 100 project to people?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. We're just trying to rank the top 100 players for the coming NBA season. So we're not ranking the 100 best seasons of 2015-16. We're trying to kind of put the players in order from best on down for the upcoming season as a way to kind of preview the season, get the juices flowing a little bit, and also just for our own personal masochism. It's just a way to really dig deep into the numbers and, you know, figure out who's doing what over the last couple of seasons. So this is the fourth straight year that we've done it. Every year it's basically Rob and I. Our process is pretty straightforward. We basically spend 2 weeks straight on the phone arguing about every single number. we start with our own individual list. We eventually merge the lists. And then we just go right down from one basically to, you know, 130 or so, because we do have some snubs. And we try to balance basically every variable. We're looking at age, health, statistical production, advanced stats. We're looking at team context. You know, we're looking at any other sort of relevant factors, whether it's off-court incidents, things of that nature. We're looking at impact on teams, wins and losses. We're looking at individual awards. We basically try to bring in everything. And the real focus is, like, where do these guys rank in a vacuum, right? So, like, if you just take a random player, throw him on a team, and now that's his squad, how valuable is he relative to the other players? And needless to say, we never make everyone happy. And we usually make everyone unhappy, honestly. And that's kind of part of the fun of it. But I think the big take...
It's all in the game.
Yeah, and the big takeaway from the project for us really is, you know, we're trying to challenge conventional wisdom a little bit because we do dig so deeply into the numbers. I mean, my fingers are bleeding. My eyes are throbbing. My final word count for my half of the top 100 was 22,000 words. So, I mean, this...
I don't know why you guys do that to yourselves, first of all.
Yeah.
Like, I would never commit to a project like this.
We've
been over this before. I don't ever care about lists, like even all-time lists. Like, it's just not my thing. And but I'm glad, because when I, like, obviously top 100 is pretty self-explanatory, but I'm glad you got into just like just how intense you guys are about this, because for people who don't know, I saw you and Rob in Vegas, and I was like, oh, so you guys do like a top 100 thing every year. Like, it'd be fun to do a podcast. Like, maybe we can like hash it out on the air or whatever. And you guys both look at me and are like, nah, man, like, it's way too nerdy and pathetic to do in public.
Well, see, the thing is, I don't only just sign up for it. I really have been the driver of conceiving of making it more and more diabolical every year. And I do kind of feel bad for Rob because he's pretty much my hostage at this point. Like, he's a very friendly guy. If people don't know him, like, he'll just kind of go with the flow on most everything. And we just continue to make it more and more ridiculous. But we're also trying to separate it from some of the other lists that are out there. I mean, you see some sort of Twitter-based list. You see some, survey the wide spectrum of crowd and try to kind of crowdsource the list. So ours, we're looking for sort of the most thorough, the most analytical, and then also, hopefully, our goal would be the most thoughtful, because we really do argue, like, right down to the nitty-gritty. I mean, we spent a long time going back and forth on, like, Jeff Teague versus Goran Dragic versus George Hill versus Tony Parker.
I love it. I mean, I love it.
it's pathetic. And yeah, honestly, so,
by the way, my favorite part of the process thus far has been you sending an email to, like, seven other SI staffers with the preliminary list. I guess it was, like, a week before this. And you led off by saying, for your eyes only. Like, this was some kind of classified document. No. And I can't wait. Next year, my plan is to leak this to like, Julian Assange or something. We're going to get this to the streets early.
See, the Russians got us in 2014. So we've really...
So you got to be careful.
We really had to step it up these last couple of years. Because, like, you just never know. If somebody finds out that Fournier is 95 early, it just ruins the whole experience.
Yeah, you know, people are waiting to see where Clint Capella is ranked. So let's get into it. I've prepared for this podcast. In fact, that's a rarity for me, but I am, as I said, on vacation. My wife, still sounds weird to say wife, but she went to bed early last night, and I just, like, broke out the list. I took some notes and some things I don't really understand, because I'll also say, You solicited advice from us, like, beforehand, and I actually sent back, like, five or six suggestions for the list, all of which were ignored. In fact, I think you actually went the other direction. And I don't know what happened. So there must have been a communication breakdown. Maybe you didn't get the email.
We saw the email. No. Well, here, like, why don't we start with your biggest beef? Because I think, like, just to summarize for people, like, the top five.
No. Look, Ben, we have a process here. We're going to go through the process.
Oh, let's do it.
First of all, I want to know what has pissed the most people off over the past few days. What are you seeing in your mentions? RIP your mentions.
So, yeah. No, I just let them die, okay? I took the mentions off life support. I cut all the tubes. What's funny is that when you get into this, because we're, you know, writing basically 4,000 words a day for, like, 5 days straight, I actually don't want to see the feedback, because it would crush my spirit. Like, to be able to, like, come back every single day to write another 10 or another 15 blurbs about guys and do the hour of legwork on each one to make sure it's thorough.
Yeah.
There's just no way you can do it. So with that being said, I don't have a great answer for you on that. A few people did take advantage of my open direct messages to freak out about Kyrie Irving and to kind of, you know, talk junk back to talk junk back and forth between the Warriors and the Cavaliers. So I think... And that's not super surprising, because usually what ends up happening with this list is, like, the teams who play really well in the playoffs and the guys who really show out in the playoffs, their fans always feel like they're underrated, because we're not only basing it on the playoffs, we're basing it on the whole year and all these other factors.
You know what I've loved about the NBA offseason thus far? And really, honestly, it's been about a year and a half. There's not a day I sign on Twitter when I don't see Cavaliers fans and Warriors fans talking shit to each other. It's incredible.
Well, you know,
the nonstop disrespect is really quite something.
Well, you know me. I pretty much hate all Twitter memes. Like, I'm almost always against them. But the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead in the finals thing to me is the single funniest thing on Twitter. Of the jokes that get run into the ground over and over and over again, I still find that one actually pretty funny. So buried somewhere in the 22,000 words of text are a few of those 3-1 lead jokes. And hopefully the Cavaliers fans were able to find them.
Yeah, no, the Cavs fans deserve it. And I think, you know, I actually think that the Warriors' disrespect has gone a little bit too far. But at the same time, like, the universe is about to balance out because they're going to just, like, go scorched earth for the next 9 months. So we're good. But come on, so who – there hasn't been – what about Knicks fans? Are Knicks fans pissed off about Rose and Noah both missed the list? Porzingis, I actually like where Porzingis is. He's, he's like 67 or something.
That sounds right. You know, putting me on the spot here with the specific numbers is tricky, but he is.
That's all right. I've got the list. And also, for anyone who wants to see it, I just retweeted it. You can go to either one of our Twitters and you can see the full list. It's actually easier to read it on mobile, where you can really scroll through quick. But yeah, so what about are Knicks fans pissed off? Who's in your mentions?
Okay, so here's the biggest angry people, I think. The debate between 2 and 3, Durant versus Curry, definitely got to the Curry people.
Really?
Because we went Durant over Curry. I think another one that was fairly heated was Chris Paul versus Westbrook. We wound up going Paul over Westbrook, and basically everyone, and you might have been one of those people, suggested that we flip them when we did send out that initial list. Everyone said Westbrook over Paul, and we just stuck to our guns and said, screw you guys.
Interesting.
So that was one that we heard about. I think Knicks fans definitely, with both Rose and Noah falling so far off the list, because I think that they had both been in the top 50 or pretty close last year, I think that was a moment where, you know, maybe people were a little bit shaken. And like I said, it's been a lot of Cavs fans. I mean, I think Kyrie Irving basically winning the finals with that three-pointer and then being at 25. We felt really good about where we came down on Kyrie. But I think obviously his fans, when they look at the list and they see not only Curry, Paul, Westbrook above him, but also Lowry and also Wall and also Lillard. And so now he's the seventh, the seventh point guard down there with Mike Conley. I think that they feel a little bit jilted.
No, that was like just declaring war on Cavs internet, which the Cavs have a solid internet following. I guess any NBA champion would, but they're out there in these streets. So that does not surprise me. The Knicks thing, you had mentioned that earlier. I kind of can't believe when I was at a wedding earlier this summer and was cornered by a couple Knicks fans, and they were all in on Derrick Rose and Noah and couldn't really understand why I wasn't, and why I was kind of like, I don't know what the plan is, and could be a rough couple of years. And I had just never met like some real delusional Knicks fans in the wild, because I've been like, Knicks internet kind of generally has like a sense of humor about themselves, but like that was the real thing. Like those are the people that James Dolan is like trying to keep happy every offseason.
Well, and so here's the thing though. My experience with those types of fans among the Knicks fan base is that they're also the people who want everybody fired on November 15th after they start like 0-5. It just swing the pendulum swings real hard with those people. So I think that this is kind of like the era of optimism. And I think that's part of it too, in terms of the timing of the top 100. I mean, one of the evil sadistic things about this list is there's not anything else going on. And basically, 20 fan bases think they're going to win the title. And so they can just pick apart all these guys who we've supposedly underrated and freak out about why, Hassan Whiteside's not a top 10 player or whatever. And Knicks fans certainly fall right into that mix. But, you know, with Rose and Noah, I mean, let me just ask you, do you feel like Rose and Noah were top 100 guys? Because we looked
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Noah, if he were healthy, I mean, I'm not, like, I'm looking at the list now, like, I'd rather have Noah than Mason Plumlee or Cody Zeller if he's healthy for 82 games. But, like, I don't think, after the last few years, I don't think you can count on him to be out there enough to put him in the mix for this list.
Oh yeah,
but let's get into it.
No, well, that actually gives me a great opportunity to drop one of those truisms that the first and most important ability is availability. And so guys like Plumlee and Zeller, you know, even in Enes Kanter, Biombo, I mean, these guys aren't people that we necessarily love, but when you look at, you know, durability, you look at how many minutes they're feeling, you're looking at total quantity of production, we're going to always value that over name recognition. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to get on you're not going to get on this list because of what you did in 2011. And let me have one asterisk there. We learned that lesson the hard way, because year after year, we kept Kobe Bryant propped up on this list out of respect for a Hall of Famer.
I like that.
Out of sort of the fear that he would make us look terrible by completely outplaying his ranking. And then year after year, he just, you know, basically for 3 years in a row, we completely overrated him. So we have tried to correct our process a little bit, and Rose really falls into that category where he just felt like we can't give him credit for 2011, given that this is going to be 2017.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Rose, even the last few years, Rose has been pretty rough. I'm surprised you stuck him in there as long as you did. But all right, so now I've taken some notes and some things that I just don't agree with. And we'll start. We're gonna get to like Kyrie, Carmelo, the Westbrook debate at the top. But let's start at the bottom. Let's nerd out here for a few minutes. Okay. Devin Booker at 100. I mean, come on, man. Like, he's definitely in the top 70. There's no, you can't tell me that you'd take Kyle Korver over Devin Booker right now.
Okay.
Kyle Korver was straight up bad last year.
Okay.
And hold on. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, so careful with the Korver references, because Korver, I think, has like naked pictures of Rob on his computer. Rob,
that explains it.
Rob is the most loyal Kyle Korver fan there is, and every time I do any kind of an interview about this, Korver's name always comes up, and I generally throw Rob under the bus every single time for that. One thing though with Korver is his numbers did bounce back. He had early injuries last year. His numbers came back up to sort of where they normally would be as the season wore on. Not quite as good as the previous season, but still pretty effective. We just weren't quite ready to bail out on him yet.
Hold on, Ben. This is not about Korver, okay? This is about, I sent you a note after seeing the preliminary list, and I said, Devin Booker is way too low. And then I'm looking at it. Marvin Williams, you have Marvin Williams as the 65th best player in the NBA. Are you kidding me?
Marvin Williams is just he was really good last year.
I know, but that's contract year Marvin Williams. He's played well like once every 5 years in the league. And I'm a Carolina fan, so I've been rooting for him. But like, let's not kid ourselves. Just flip Devin Booker, because he's going to be kind of like a fringe all-star this year.
No.
Put Devin Booker at 65.
No, man. Okay. First of all, Kentucky's ready to draft you. North Carolina's ready to forsake you for these comments. So with Marvin Williams, we are worried about that contract year bump, because his numbers, his efficiency, everything just skyrocketed up. But he's also found himself a really strong, solid role on a team that needs him to play big minutes, right? So if you're if you're going to say, what are the odds that he can do like 85 to 90% of what he did last year, we think pretty good. The thing with Booker that you're overlooking, and this is a very common complaint that we get from the people.
Common layperson complaint.
Well, from our other SI colleagues, defense really matters to us. Being a two-way impact player really matters. And Devin Booker was arguably the worst defensive player in the NBA last year. I mean, he was way, way, way down that list. So that was red flag number one. Red flag number two for us was, he hasn't established himself as a three-point shooter in the NBA yet. His numbers improved after the All-Star break, no doubt about it. But you look at his overall efficiency, it's still not there. And then the real red flag for us, bigger than anything else, is that these guys who he was really stepping up in their absence are all supposedly coming back, right? I mean, they got log jams everywhere, as always, in Phoenix, because they're never content with just one, right? They want both Morris twins. They want like 9 guards from Kentucky who all need the ball in their hands.
Yeah, but I think he's going to get his minutes. I mean, he
I agree.
He's sort of the selling point for that team at this point.
I agree that he's going to be the face, but when you make a financial commitment to both Brandon Knight and you've got Eric Bledsoe rep by LeBron's people, you got to give those guys big minutes and touches too. So you either have to trade them, which may take a while to play out, or you're going to have to try to do a balancing act. And they, by the way, they've got the least expensive and least experienced coach to try to handle this balancing act. So good luck with that. So
yeah, no, that's fair.
So those are some of the things that we thought might stand in Booker's way a little bit. Obviously, we love his overall game and potential. I mean, I was gushing about him at Summer League for, 3 weeks straight. We just, aren't sure sometimes with the young guys whether that development is going to come in a straight line or whether it's going to be sort of 2 steps forward, 1 step back kind of a thing. and that's why we kind of submarined Booker just a little bit. But he is really bad at defense, and he's got to up the three-point numbers.
First of all, I'm never going to stop laughing about how seriously you and Rob take this. It's amazing. No, I mean, you're wrong about Booker. When the dust settles, he's definitely going to be in the 60s this season. It, just in terms of, like, I don't think he's an all-star, but I think he's going to be kind of like the first, one of the first or second alternates on the outside, where people are going to be talking about him. Like, he's on the bubble. And that's who I, the type of guy I would put in the 60s. He'll be one of the better guards. And we should address this going forward. Do you think we've gotten to a point where people care too much about defense?
No, absolutely not, because you think Devin Booker is amazing. And I think, honestly, your wife...
No, no, no.
Listen, your wife in her wedding dress could score 5 points in a game of 21 against Devin Booker. No doubt about
it. She really, really couldn't. Well, here's my thing. It's like... You can find all kinds of people who can play defense and generally replicate the type of, like, 75% of what, like, an all NBA defender can do, but you're not going to find guys who can replicate what Devin Booker, what James Harden, what even Kyrie Irving can do, Carmelo Anthony, the same thing. And I just feel like this idea that every player has to be a complete player kind of screws with the way we value some of these guys, because the fact is that, like, the ability to score in bunches is a lot more valuable.
Do you want me to answer this bluntly, or should I be polite?
Bluntly, go for it. We're gonna start getting real.
You value the wrong things. I mean, period.
I don't think so, man.
Basketball's a team sport.
5
guys who can all be complete players are going to win lots and lots of games. When you're trying to differentiate between the very best players, you know, the ultra elite players, the ability to create shots for yourself, get your own offense, are definitely things that we weigh very heavily, even over somebody who might, you know, not play any defense, like a guy like James Harden. I mean, he's so good at that, carrying an offense, efficient offense. We're going to give him credit for that. But if you're talking about these role player type guys, if you're not the lead ball handler on your team, and each team's only going to have like one or two of those guys, it is far more valuable to your team concept if you can be a positive impact guy on both ends of the court. If you're just out there filling up numbers,
all right, hold up.
We just pretty firmly believe, from a philosophical standpoint, you got to be able to do it on both ends, if at all possible. And if you don't play defense, you have to be just out of this world good offensively. Or vice versa.
Okay. On the other hand, we just watched the NBA Finals play out. And what I think I'm trying to say is that you can find a lot of Tristan Thompsons. You can find a lot of James Jones. You can find a lot of those guys who can fill spots on the floor. It's the guys like Kyrie, and I can't believe you're going to make me stand out for Kyrie in this podcast. But it's the guys like Kyrie that you can't really replicate. And that's like the game is about scoring. And if you can score on that elite level, like, I feel like that's a lot more valuable than an excellent defender.
My counter to that would be, when you look at players like J.R. Smith, Tristan Thompson, and a lot of the other guys who are playing real minutes in the Cavaliers rotation. A lot of those guys were valuable two-way guys. Tristan Thompson's absolutely a valuable two-way player. Same thing with J.R. Smith. If you don't have those guys, they also don't win the title. And if LeBron...
I don't know if you can call J.R. Smith a two-way player.
Last year, he absolutely was. There's a reason why Clay struggled.
I guess so. I'm just saying... I mean, the Warriors were the ultimate two-way team, and they lost because the Cavs just went off.
No, I think that's a misreading of it. I mean, I think that some of Clay's struggles and some of the lack of shooting on the perimeter, JR's aggressive perimeter defense during the finals and being locked in for, you know, clearly the longest stretch of his career defensively was a big factor in that happening. And also,
right.
you're
the Warriors lost because they didn't have it on offense.
I also remember this. You're kind of changing the argument here on me. But don't forget, you're the same guy who said Dellavedova over Kyrie for the exact argument that I'm making right now.
month straight. I'm not a fan of Kyrie, and I mean. Deli for life.
I think part of the reason why that they won the finals, if you really had to like boil it down, is not Kyrie's scoring. It's that LeBron took his defense to a completely different level down the stretch, and he was already so good offensively, but he's just racking up steals and blocks left and right, getting stop after stop after stop, setting the tone and getting all these other guys, even Kevin Love out there, playing, pretty locked in defense down the stretch, which I never thought was going to happen. That to me is why they won the finals. So that goes back to my complete player argument.
That's fair. I just think that we get too bogged down in worrying about how guys can play on defense when I feel like really that like the two-way player stuff matters when you're talking about like elite teams who are going to be competing for a title. But if you're talking about a guy who could go help any team in the league right now, like I honestly think that Devin Booker certainly is on Kyle Korver's level and will be the type of guy who can contribute and help swing games with offense to the point where I don't really worry about his defense that much.
Okay, so how many games did they win last year, and then how many games did the Cavaliers win when Kyrie was the show and he was allowed to do whatever he wanted and play this
That's
brilliant playmaking
style? Look, we're going to get to Kyrie. And also, the Suns were an out-and-out disaster last year, so you've got me there, too.
Here's just the point there I'm trying to make is that this happens a lot. You have these offense-first guys. A great example, Kevin Love in Minnesota. I mean, remember when people considered him a top five player MVP candidate because of his amazing 2010, 2015 type games night after night after night? Where did that really get them? You see that with, Enes Kanter. Some people want to put him in the sixth man of the year debate, but where do those numbers really get his team? I mean, you have to kind of dock him for this stuff. And so.
But then what about Dirk? What about, some of Carmelo's best years? Like, it works both ways. Because James Harden was awful on defense a few years ago and had the Rockets as a two seed or they were near the top of the West.
I would argue that Harden was actually pretty solid 2 years ago defensively, but he took a gigantic step back last year, and that step was one of the key factors in sort of their team falling apart last year. But look, I think that, if there's a bias to our list, you're hitting on a really strong point, which is that we're absolutely honing in on guys who do it both ways or have the all-around games. We're also really giving advantage to guys who are playmakers for both themselves and others too, right? So it's not just that you're going out there and dropping 30 and making it look easy, but that you're also setting your teammates up. You're playing on an efficient offense, and you're doing it night in, night out. We kind of, give people extra bonus credit for that too. So
is that how Paul Millsap wound up as a top 15 player in the NBA?
Absolutely. I mean, you look at his defensive stats, he was right there in the defensive player of the year conversation. I think, offensively, inside, outside,
I'm
versatility.
With you right now.
Look, I understand that these guys are not sexy. I mean, they're not headline name guys, but that's part of the reason why we do the list too. I mean, guys like Paul Millsap deserve love. And if we're the only people
out there giving
it to him, I'm going to give it to him.
All right, so moving on here, I have another beef with you. Rodney Hood at 85. He should be at like a solid 20 spots higher, or at least 15 spots. Like I wanted you guys to flip him with Ricky Rubio. That was a suggestion that was just straight up ignored. Where's the love for my guy?
Well, so make the case for me that Rodney Hood's ready right now to be that high.
I think if you go down in terms of shooting guards that good teams would want, he is probably 3 or 4, and that's, I mean, I think there's a lot of value there to the point where, I'd rather have Rodney Hood than, I feel bad keep coming back to Kyle Korver, but I'd rather have him than Korver or even Ricky Rubio.
Yeah, so with Rodney, I mean, you know.
Or Danny Green.
Yeah, okay, so Danny Green, I think we're going to have to set aside because he's another one of our sort of like annual favorites where he's so good defensively that he just gets underrated by the average person. Even when he has an off-shooting year, he's still a big-time contributor. But if we look at Rodney Hood, I mean, you know I like Rodney Hood. I did a whole story on him, probably 2,000 words in whatever, January, February.
Right.
Part of it with him offensively is, you know, he's not that knockdown shooter quite yet. He's very good on the ball. He's, you know, good pick and roll, has a nice feel. He's able to, you know, play make for others. He's not an explosive scorer necessarily. I understand this summer he's really working on trying to get the basket more and get to the free throw line more often. I think that'd be a great development for his game. Like many young wings, he just doesn't grade out that well defensively. I mean, that's an awesome defensive team around him. There's lots of parts there. He's just not quite there yet. Also, we had some questions in terms of his role. I mean, I think ideally he starts at 2 for them next year and handles the ball a lot. With Burks coming back, maybe that's going to cut into his usage a little bit. So we wanted to see a little bit more from him. We thought he had a nice breakout. The advanced stats like him. They don't necessarily love him. And so we were being a little bit cautious with Rodney Hood. But he's absolutely in that sweet spot of a player where he could easily outperform his ranking. And I think the tendency I'm hearing from you is a lot of young players who you think we didn't quite give enough of an optimistic look forward to.
Well, he's good. He can play either guard spot. He's going to be a critical part of a Jazz team that should take a couple steps forward this year to be in the mix with like the top half of the West. And I feel like, especially where the NBA is now, there's a lot of value into those big kind of rangy guards who can play like 3 different positions, hit from the perimeter. Like, I don't know. I feel like in terms of raw value, Hood is pretty high at this point.
Yeah, well, you are speaking my language because versatility, especially positionally on both ends.
I love it.
is very important to us. And also, I think the argument you started with was that you could kind of drop him on any team. We call that sort of adaptability or another word that I like to use is transferability. Like, can you just take this player, plop him on a different situation? And you absolutely could with him. I mean, the Thunder would have loved to have him. The Grizzlies were like thirsting over him publicly last year. I mean, team after team after team would have liked to be able to get this guy because he slipped on draft day. But we want to see a little bit of progress defensively. If he becomes a plus defender, like a night in, night out plus defender, which is definitely in his wheelhouse given his length, the ranginess that you're talking about. He can be a top 50 or 60 guy next year, no doubt about it. And he's also a guy who can make us look bad. And let me say this, we don't mind getting made look bad by young players because that means there's another exciting guy out there for us to get, get on the hype train about. So
that's
please.
Good, man. All Devin Booker and Rodney Hood are going to make you guys look really stupid.
Well, you know who did that last year, though? It was actually Isaiah Thomas. He called us out on Twitter. He was down in like the 80s range, something like that last year, maybe in the 90s.
Isaiah Thomas?
Yeah. And
oh, wow.
And he came out and just, you know, had a career year, took the Celtics, you know, to great offensive rating. Was able to kind of get by defensively. They have a top 5 defense. He's their lead playmaker, you know, career year across the board. And now all of a sudden he's, you know, 40 or 50 spots higher this year. So we love it when guys accept that challenge.
Good. Next point that I had, this is not necessarily a criticism, but Jonas Valanciunas, Greg Monroe, Zach Randolph at 62, 63, 64. Did you guys just decide to cluster those guys, that like cluster of big man mediocrity together to keep it convenient for everyone?
I don't know if that was intentional, but you know, there was some of the same logic, especially with Jonas and Monroe. in terms of...
Those guys are just kind of depressing to me as a basketball fan. And Zebo has an excuse because he's played for like 15 years, but it's just a little rough with Valanciunas and Greg Monroe.
Yeah, the isolation-heavy offensive guys who are efficient but then give it back on the other end really took a hit for us this year. You know, a lot of centers who just sort of didn't fit that modern profile fell off our list this year in terms of the versatility and the rim protection that we talked about. And those guys, you know, Valanciunas, he's younger, so he did climb a little bit on the list, but Monroe fell quite a bit. Part of the reason that Monroe kind of landed where he did is, you know, people forget not only did Milwaukee have sort of fit problems with him, but look what Detroit did without him, you know? Like, they just completely took off. Like, they got rid of him and then got 12 wins better. And remember when people were, like, freaking out, like, oh, they lost him in free agency for nothing? It's like that wound up being, like, a huge addition by subtraction. So things like that we do kind of take into account.
I would have been meaner than you guys were. So shout out to you guys for having a heart for the the dying low post center.
Well, and with Valanciunas, we did give him a little bump. I should have mentioned this, is that he's going to have to play a lot this year. You know, when you lose Biyombo and then you replace him with the rookie and your other options are like to try to make Sullinger or Patrick Patterson or one of those guys a five, like you're probably...
Dude, I can't do it. And I can't do another year of this is the year for Jonas Valanciunas. I can't do it anymore. I'm all set on that narrative with the Raptors. I don't know how Toronto fans keep doing it, but you know it is what it is.
Well, he's still very young. I haven't given up yet. He you got to admit though, he's the best pump faker in the NBA.
Absolutely, sure. I was there like 4 years ago when he won MVP in Vegas.
Me too.
And
I love
writing
that.
Like this is the year for Jonas, and it's been a while. I think that was like 2012. So next up. Bradley Beal at 58. You're putting a lot of faith in my guy. I feel like that's about 20 spots too high.
Ooh.
I forget, given your like availability maxim or whatever you were talking about, like Beal has to play, like Beal at 58 for reference is ahead of JJ Redick, Andrew Wiggins, Victor Oladipo at 74. We actually should probably address Oladipo. What's your beef with him? I mean, he's talk about a two-way guy. Like, he's going to be fantastic and should be great in OKC. But I can't deal with I can't put that much faith in Beal to be nearly top 50 in the NBA.
So this is another interesting phenomenon that happens. We get the stands for the team fans who really go hard for their guys being underrated, right?
Uh-huh.
But then there's a secondary group of people who like passionately follow a certain franchise, who know the ins and outs, and like basically they get annoyed by their own players and then start to like go against them and argue that they should be lower. So we do try to find a happy medium between them. You know, Beal is a guy just in general in terms of like with the when healthy tag on him is like completely transferable. Put him on any squad. You know, the three-point ability, the smooth offensive game. Yes, he could get to the free throw line more often. Yes, he's very fragile. But he always seems like he's on the potential for a breakout. I think I picked him as the most improved player last year. That did not work out very well. This could be his last shot to keep getting the benefit of the doubt from us when it comes to the health. We thought,
right.
You know, defensively, his numbers last year coming back from the injury were not great. So, you know, I will admit he does feel a little bit overrated on this list based on what he's accomplished, but some of this is forward looking with him. He's right in that sweet spot of guys where it's like, you know, year four, year five.
Like could be an all-star, could take a couple steps forward this year. I don't know.
Exactly.
I think I'm trying to manage my own expectations. So maybe that's where the criticism's coming from.
The guys in his age range are the ones who do tend to like have that big bust out, right? Once you've gotten your feet wet, you understand how the league works, you've gone through all the, you know, the rookie wall, the sophomore slumps and all that stuff. You're at the end of your first rookie contract or you're heading into your rookie extension. That's when a lot of guys really solidify and break out into big, you know, big time lead options. We felt like in Washington, he was going to get his shots and touches. The whole tension with John Wall, that did kind of raise some consternation, no doubt about it. He is a guy who's got 24 points per game, plus solid defense potential. And so for that reason, we didn't want to have him separated too far from a guy like CJ McCollum, given that Beal is a few years younger than McCollum and arguably has a higher ceiling.
No, I like it. You might actually be more right on this one. I'm going to need you to, before the season starts, we'll need to block off like 30, 40 minutes and you can talk me through my issues with the Wizards and Beal and Wall. But Parsons at 51, is Rob like boys with him from Dallas or something? Is this like a personal thing? I don't understand.
So this podcast is just degenerated to players that you don't like and you're just going to like rip on.
Exactly. It's great.
Okay. In defense of Parsons.
But like my man Parsons wasn't really on the court last year. Yeah. Like I don't understand. I mean, I'm happy for him that he got paid, but I really don't think he's going to be the same player ever again. And which is why like it's cool. It's great. He made $95 million this summer, so he's in good shape. But I would not, there's no way I put Chandler Parsons above Jay Crowder, Reg, even Tristan Thompson. Like, I don't know, man.
So with Parsons and guys coming off injuries, we tend to give them one pass, not two passes. We felt like he was still kind of on his first pass. If he has a bounce back year, if, you know, last year's weird surgery, which wasn't really announced or confirmed and then kind of dragged on and he wasn't the same guy, continues to be a thing, then he's going to take a big hit. But healthy Parsons, as we've seen, is exactly the kind of, you know, versatile two-way player, can defend multiple positions, doesn't need to have the ball, but can play make for you a little bit, can shoot a little bit, is active off the ball. It's just kind of the guy who's, you know, the oil or the glue of an offense. He's played for some successful teams, and clearly he's valued by the market given, you know, the kind of expenditure that Memphis put out to get him.
It was a really weird market, yeah.
And so I think he's kind of in similar zone with some other guys at that spot, you know, guys like Nicholas Batum, Gallinari. You know, he's kind of in the mix with them as players as well. So to me, I don't necessarily – I could see – if there's one guy on that section of the list that we might have underrated a little bit, it's Crowder. You know, his defensive stats are off the chart. The issue
he's so good.
The issue we had with Crowder is that he takes a lot of three-pointers and he misses a lot of them. If he can bump that up a little bit next year, and maybe we should have been a little bit more optimistic in our forecasting of him, because if he can get that closer to, like, league average, you know, Crowder's a guy who could go from sort of being completely off the map to being, like, a top 35 guy, like, real quick. But Parsons, we kind of have one eye on Parsons. You know, if there's continued injury issues, he's going to fall pretty quick.
No, I'm happy for him. He can put this feather in his cap. Top 50 NBA player and $95 million contract. I don't know if it's going to get much better from here, NBA wise, but I think his life is pretty dope in general, so he should be okay. All right, let's move on. We've got about 20 more minutes here, and we should probably talk about players that the general public cares more about. Let me just say, I love Steven Adams at 40. I love the faith that you're putting in him. I think he's going to be awesome this year, and I feel like those playoffs were less of an aberration and more of a turning point for him, and he's just going to kind of body people. All year long. Love Kemba Walker at 36, above Isaiah Thomas. I think if you put Kemba in the Celtics system, that team doesn't really miss a beat. And he's just been awesome. I have some questions about Rudy Gobert as the 33rd best player in the league and above Hassan Whiteside, above Dwight Howard, and above Steven Adams. Like, what's different between Rudy Gobert and Steven Adams?
About, like, 3 feet of wingspan. no, so just real quick, can I give a Kemba mea culpa to the Kemba stans who were really upset that he got snubbed last year? He's another guy who just burst onto the list this year.
He improved his game a ton last season.
Absolutely, and I think in hindsight, he would have been a really good pick. If I could have gone and done it over, I might have thrown my unofficial ballot to him as the most improved player, because just basically every metric, he took a gigantic leap forward. And he'd already been established and could have stuck to his guns in terms of how he was playing the first few years of his career. So I think, you know, kudos and hats off to Kemba Walker for that. In terms of these in terms of these centers, we got into a little bit of a rock, paper, scissors debate with these guys. And when we think that people are close, we tend to play the game of who would you rather have on your team? Like, who do you really trust? And
no one's going to choose Dwight or Hassan Whiteside.
Exactly. You took the words out of my mouth. I mean, that was really what it kind of came down to, is if you had to choose one of those guys, Rudy Gobert, we felt like was the most trustworthy. Number one, we felt that...
Who did Dwight sign with this summer?
The Atlanta Hawks, man. Come on.
Oh, my God. The Hawks. That's right.
So here's the thing with Rudy.
Rough. Yeah.
Obviously, everybody knows about his defensive impact. You know, I mean, defensive player of the year potential year in, year out when he's healthy. When he was out last year, their record and all their numbers really fell off hard. So for us, that was a clear sign like this guy is the real deal when it comes to his value. Offensively, he's very much of a Tyson Chandler in terms of like dunking and not a lot else going on. But he's giving you something offensively. It's not going to be to the Hassan Whiteside level of like production. It's not going to be, you know, Dwight wanting to sap up possession. So it's kind of a nice little medium ground where like he's an option. He's a release valve. He'll hit the glass for you. But he's not going to try to dominate and, you know, slow down your offense and like isolate and just have it go nowhere. I mean,
that type of guy is useful. He doesn't need touches to be effective.
Exactly. So if you're talking about defensively, you know, a top five player potentially, and offensively a plus, that's a really good player. And that's sort of where we got there. We didn't see any red flags in terms of personality or anything like that. You know, Whiteside's probably the hardest guy on the entire list to grade, honestly. Because...
I love, you're talking like an NFL draft scout. It's amazing. we definitely need to release the lost tapes of you and Mahoney going through this.
Here's what it'll sound like. It'll be like, don't you think Chris Middleton should be like four spots higher? And then the other person will just be silent for like 10 seconds. Then it'll just, you'll hear this, and then like, we have to start the
great.
We have to start the whole conversation over.
Just to close the book on Gobert, I think the idea of Rudy Gobert is fantastic. And if he shows up for Utah this year, that's like I think they're top four in the West and awesome. I think I'm a little bit biased because I just kind of... He sort of no-showed at the Olympics a little bit, and granted, the international game isn't necessarily... I think he's probably more valuable in the NBA, but I don't know. I just kind of want to see it before we put him in that mix above some of the guys. Like, Steven Adams like dominated a playoff series, and Rudy Gobert has yet to play 82 games, let alone make the playoffs. And we got to get to Kyrie, but... Derek Favors at 28 is another guy where like the idea of Derek Favors is awesome, but in real life, there's no way I'd rather have Derek Favors than Andre Drummond.
Derek Favors is awesome. I mean, I think it's not just the idea.
He's like an NBA Reddit urban legend. Like, I don't know any regular human who's like, Derek Favors is awesome.
I was caping out real hard for Derek Favors last year. You know, I think on last year's blurb, I called him the most underrated player in the NBA. And so this year we just egregiously overrated him on our list so that people would talk about him.
I don't know how this happened.
No, I'm kidding. Derek Favors is really, really, really good. And I think there's kind of mumblings or murmurs that he's trying to add a corner three to his game. If he adds a corner three to his game, he has insane ceiling in terms of like utility and usefulness. And the blurb that I kind of wrote about him for this,
I love that there are Derek Favors rumblings. Yeah.
The blurb that I wrote about him was basically, I can't wait to see him in a playoff series, in a playoff matchup, because what do you do? Do you try to stay big because he's so big as a power forward and match up with him, or do you try to stretch him out and play small and try to cut against the grain against them? Because if you play big, now you're playing into their hands a little bit, and he's really good, and he can just pound your guy. If you play small, he can really pound your guy on one end, and he's pretty versatile. I mean, he can kind of get out and track guys a little bit on defense too, even though he's a huge player. So to me, he just forces coaches to make decisions when he plays that power forward spot. And then at the same time, he's multi-positional. He can slide over and play center and play it very well. Big time two-way contributor offensively. The dude just puts the ball in the basket with little remorse. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter if he's
so
cutting.
What you're describing is basically like a more skilled version of Tristan Thompson.
I think that's
an awesome player. Yeah,
that's almost an insult, you know, to Tristan or to Derek Favors. I mean, he's a really good offensive player. I think, you know,
right.
Tristan's a much better offensive rebounder. But if you're talking about polish and hands and finishing and instincts in terms of scoring, isolation moves on the block, I mean, Derek Favors has got all this stuff. You know, part of the thing to keep in mind with Utah, too, is that they play an incredibly slow pace. When you look at these guys' numbers, you have to factor that in mentally a little bit. You know, guys like Hayward, Favors, even a Rodney Hood, you know, they would have bigger numbers, bigger volume numbers, no question about it, if they played in a faster and looser system. So I think that's part of it too with Favors. But Favors just aces all the advanced stats too. I mean, if you really watch him play, you're thinking, this guy's so smart, he's so good, he's so efficient. And then you look at the numbers like, wow, like it really pans out there too. So he had some.
I don't know if that's what you think when you watch Derek Favors play.
Well, you probably.
I think you watch him play and you're like, huh. This Jazz team has some pieces, but they, for some reason, haven't done anything in the last 3 years. And it might be time. Maybe this is the year that they all turn the corner. Because I understand, like, Derek Favors has had value for a couple years, but he's kind of in that Jonas category where you've been waiting for him to turn the corner, and it just hasn't really happened.
Well, in fairness to him, I mean, he was injured for a stretch last year, and I think that...
Yeah.
Gobert's injury is really what set that narrative of them being this big disappointing team. I think that they were 7-14 last year without Gobert. So if you even just play him in half those games, they win at their normal winning percentage there in the playoffs, and the whole story is different. So, you know, they were just crippled up and down the roster with injuries last year. I expect them to be a team that wins 50 games this season.
Well, and also I should say Favors is probably the biggest reason that they have that they're like better positioned than almost anyone in the league to counter what Golden State does, and that's strictly because of Favors' versatility and ability to play to sort of pound that front line a little bit.
100%. I mean, I agree with that exactly, and that's where I was going with the matchup issues, because teams like Golden State and San Antonio, when they go into playoff series, they're used to being themselves and having other teams match up with them. When you go against a front line or a perimeter line that has Gobert, Favors, Hayward, and Hood, that's like your 2 through 5, all of a sudden you've got to start thinking about how do we adapt to these guys, how do we match up with these guys, and Favors is right in the middle of it, like you said, and that makes him a unique and very valuable player. He's also the kind of guy to me is super transferable. You put him on any contender and he is going to give them
a
lot.
He can help, yeah. So, all right, let's move to Carmelo 24th and Kyrie 25th. Is this some kind of statement about Team USA? Were you just not in this year?
It's not a statement so much about that.
We can throw out Carmelo because I don't want to argue. Arguing about Carmelo on the internet is never a good idea.
That's how I feel about Kyrie.
Take me through your Kyrie Irving objections, because 25th is low after the playoffs that he had.
Okay, so number one, you know, he obviously started last season injured, right? But his numbers across the board were pretty ugly relative to his peak numbers in terms of three-point shooting, efficiency, and a lot of those other things too. Now, he turned some of that around in the postseason, no question about it, but he was kind of coming off of a down year. When you're in this very hotly contested point guards conversation in terms of guys like Damian Lillard, John Wall, Kyle Lowry, and the superstar guys, you know, the top three with Steph, Westbrook, and Chris Paul, you can't have a down year because everybody else is having pretty good years. And even a guy like Wall, he fell slightly on our list this year for kind of a similar reason, right? So the margin of error there for point guards is already pretty low. Our biggest bone of contention with Kyrie, though, is when you compare him to the guys above him on the list, he is basically the worst defender in the top 25 when you look at the advanced stats, and it's not even that close. Damian Lillard's really bad too, but basically everybody else is much closer to a two-way player than Kyrie is. And ultimately, like, that's half the game. So we do look at that and we kind of hold that against him. Of course, I think you can make a strong counter argument that there aren't very many players above him on the list that, number one, would have the self-confidence to take the game-winning three-pointer.
Right.
And number two, would be able to kind of hit it. And so from that standpoint, we see his virtues, but we just don't believe that's necessarily enough to warrant a ranking over some of these all-around guys, where it just kind of fails the vacuum test. Because we've seen Kyrie in a vacuum, and Dion Waiters was punching him in the locker room, and they were winning 20 games, and the coaches was getting fired. And that wasn't really that long ago. So I like how
you're using we. It's like you and Rob are like the NCAA selection committee.
Oh, when I'm saying we, I'm speaking on behalf of Sports Illustrated and Time Inc. Okay.
Okay, great. Can I tell you a Kyrie Irving story?
Of course.
All right, so this was back in May at my bachelor party, and a friend of a friend is friends with an NBA player. So we were all hanging out, and unnamed NBA player, we're all hanging out watching basketball, arguing about basketball. Player X brings up Kyrie and says he's the best offensive player in the league. And I'm sitting there like, man, because I've never been a huge Kyrie fan. And I'm like, man, get the fuck out of my face. And we start arguing going back. He said, because this was also at the peak of Steph Curry, like, mania. Like, Steph was currently, like, tearing through the playoffs. He was in the middle. This was Memorial Day weekend, so he was in the middle of coming back against the Thunder. And I was like, look, you just can't say that after the year that Steph had. And he was like, no, like, let me tell you, like, Kyrie is absolutely the most gifted offensive player in the league. And I was like, again, like, just, he's not on the same level as Steph. And then it started to get personal. He was like, well, how much basketball have you played? And I was like, well, like, I played a couple years in high school and that was it. And he was like, yeah, they should rename it Sports Illustrated by people who don't play sports. And so we just went back and forth, kind of yelling at each other, screaming at each other, whatever. Then fast forward like 3 weeks, I could not have looked more wrong. after the way Kyrie played those finals, what he did to Steph over and over again, I just, like, based solely on that sequence, there's no way you can have him 25th in the league. Like, he's just, I mean, and this is the thing, like, people who play basketball will rep for him forever, and people who don't will be like, well, like, he doesn't play defense, he seems like kind of a shitty teammate, he's kind of a, I don't know, like, he doesn't seem to be like the type of guy that people like to be around. And if it were just his team, like, the Cavs would be pretty miserable to be around. But I think, and this is where we differ a lot towards the top of the list, I feel like he's one of those guys that you can absolutely win a title with.
No,
obviously.
Come on.
I think there's, like, elite guys who have to be in a different echelon, because he has a gear that, like, Marc Gasol doesn't have. Like, you're not winning a title with Marc Gasol. Sorry. Like, you're not winning a title with Paul Millsap. Sorry. But Kyrie can hit that level that, like, nobody can touch.
Okay, can I start to deconstruct this yet?
There's a lot there. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so the first thing is what you described is recency bias. Okay, when you're basing your opinion of a player on 4 games,
but look, we're talking about, like, a hypothetical vacuum here where, like, I mean, yeah, like,
in a hypothetical vacuum, if he's your best player, you're not in the playoffs.
I don't think that's totally true, but yeah. And again, this is all stuff that I was arguing to this NBA dude.
Okay, so listen to yourself and trust your instincts. You know a lot about basketball. You watched the game. You were right.
I don't know, though, man. Like, those finals really made me do a double take.
Okay, if Draymond does not punch LeBron in Game 4, do you still feel this way about Kyrie?
No, I Maybe so, not necessarily. I certainly wouldn't be repping for him this hard on the podcast. But
right. And then that's kind of my checkmate. That's kind of my checkmate.
No, but he, you can't just say that his 40. I think he had what, 45 in game five?
So
that matters.
It absolutely matters, but it does not outweigh years worth of body of work and a really, really
atrocious. I don't know,
and
man.
Really atrocious defense. Look, all we're asking for him, right. If he can become a plus defender, he will move instantly into the top 10. That's really all that it takes. So go ahead and do it. We're ready for it.
But he's not going to. But Larry Bird wasn't a plus defender. NBA history is littered with minus defenders, and his defense didn't matter in the finals. So if it doesn't matter in the finals, then when does it matter?
It did matter in the finals. I mean, they like not to like legislate history, but if Draymond plays game five, they lose in five, and it matters, and everybody's talking about Kyrie's defense.
All right, we're not going to agree on this, and we only have like five more minutes, so let's.
Here's my other thing, though, with Kyrie and your friend's argument. He's not even the best offensive player on his own team, so there you go.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough.
Are you telling me that Kyrie Irving is a more talented, more gifted offensive player than LeBron?
Look, I'm just saying that this is what this dude said, and he was very, very serious about it. And we went back and forth, and it was a lot harder to argue with that idea after the finals.
Well, that's part of the reason why we put him at 25, so people would think a little bit harder than recency bias in judging a player based solely on one shot.
Educational exercise piloted by Ben Golliver and Rob Mahoney.
Yes.
All right. I love Clay at 19. I actually think that's like a good spot for him. I think he's very good. But he's not quite good enough to where you can count on him every night to be that explosive guy.
Our take with Clay was that he is basically the ideal number two option in terms of what he brings defensively, how he's willing and comfortable to be off the ball generally, but capable of stepping forward and being the number one guy if, for whatever reason, the offense is slow. Solid all-around two-way contributor. And now the ideal number two guy is now the most overqualified number three guy in the NBA. And that is why you should be afraid of the Warriors.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one reason among many. I don't understand. This is like a Ben and Rob thing. I expressed this in my initial email to you guys. Kyle Lowry and Paul Millsap above Jimmy Butler and John Wall is just like, you're trolling me specifically, and I don't like it. I don't like it one bit. You're not going to win. Like, though, Kyle Lowry and Paul Millsap are both excellent, but they're, like, first-round excellent. Like, you want to go to the conference finals, you're going to need guys like Jimmy Butler and John Wall. Okay. That would be
here's my counter-argument. Kyle Lowry just got done carrying a team to the conference finals.
I know, and Paul Millsap was there the year before.
The year before, Paul Millsap was the number one guy on a team that went to the conference finals.
And you know
what?
I don't give a shit.
John Wall has never...
my argument still stands.
John Wall has never been to the conference finals, and Jimmy Butler, his one trip to the conference finals, he wasn't really the number one guy on that team. Although he did play well.
I just feel like they're elite. They're in a different category of guys who you could really count on.
I know. And now we're telling you what's really happening.
All right. Fair enough. LaMarcus Aldridge at number 11. Are you kidding me, Ben? Did you see the second half of the Thunder series?
Did you see the first half? Did you see the first half of the Thunder series when he was putting in 40?
Yeah,
just like just like your boy Kyrie.
Come on, like the playoffs have to matter. It has to matter that when things turned up, like LaMarcus straight up disappeared.
Well, I think we got to give the Thunder defense a credit for that, for sure. They made the right adjustments. He was really strong in that series, and he was really strong all year long, too. The playoffs do matter. They're not the be-all, end-all, but we do definitely weight the playoffs pretty hard in these rankings. Again, he's a two-way guy. He's been the number one option on some really good playoff teams in Portland. He showed that he could be adaptable, transferable by going into San Antonio. And the big thing with the Spurs is they won freaking 67 games last year. They were really, 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 really good. And so yeah, we have to
they're
give
awesome across the board. We
have to give their best players credit for that level of success, because you don't see teams win that much like that. So that's why, you know, a guy like Kawhi is going to be six, and Aldridge is going to stay in this top conversation. I mean, Aldridge, you can feed him and build an entire offense around him, and that offense will be really good. And defensively, he's more than getting by. So, you know, from that standpoint,
I love you.
That's why he's there.
you're so wrong about this, but it's all good. I think if you
where would you have Aldridge?
So I think LaMarcus Aldridge is like an Al Horford type guy, where he's very, very good. But I would put you've got Horford 18. I would keep Horford 18, Klay Thompson 19. I would put LaMarcus Aldridge 20 before DeAndre Jordan.
Okay, so Aldridge is a better scorer than Horford. I think he's a, you know, a much better sort of one on one.
He's not as good of a passer.
He's a better one on one threat. I mean,
when he gets shut down in the second half of a playoff series.
Okay, so I really think
has happened before, by the way.
Yeah, but he's also gone off in one playoff series.
Exploded in the playoffs and then faded before with the Blazers.
But he's also had some really... I mean, he had back-to-back 40-plus point games against the Rockets to basically win them that playoff series early before Dame hit the three and gets all the credit for it. I mean, he's had his moments in the playoffs, too. I'm not saying he's like, Michael Jordan in the postseason of a clutch player, but I don't think this shrinking violet narrative that you're trying to push on me is completely accurate.
All right. Fair enough. I'm probably being a little hard on LaMarcus. I just he's basically top 10. I would not put him above Boogie. I would not put him above Draymond Green.
Here's one thing I'd like to point out with your personal rankings, though.
Yeah.
It does seem like you value personality a little bit.
Maybe. I also haven't put a whole lot of thought into this, so it doesn't necessarily hold up to too much cross-examination.
Well, one thing I will say is that we do not care about personality. And so I think that when you're...
clearly.
I know. And I think that comes through. Is when we're going to give guys like Millsap and Aldridge and the Kyle Lowrys of the world lots of credit when bigger stars and more interesting people and better quotes and more famous players and more established and marketable players might be behind them. And we're going to take the lumps for that, because we don't necessarily view that outside of maybe a leadership context. If you have, you know, a good charismatic personality in the locker room. But we're not really going to give you bonus points for that stuff. You will take points off if you have sort of a toxic personality, no doubt about it. But being interesting doesn't really earn you anything in our rankings.
Yeah, no, that's fair. You guys are trying to educate here. You guys are trying to tell the world about Derek Favors, and I love it.
Exactly. Yes.
I have two more takes. We'll read the top 10 here. Number 10, Blake Griffin. Number 9, Paul George. Number 8, Anthony Davis. Number 7, James Harden. Number 6, Kawhi Leonard. Number 5, Russell Westbrook. Number 4, Chris Paul. Number 3, Steph Curry. Number 2, Kevin Durant. Number 1, LeBron James, which I don't think anyone can argue with LeBron after last year. My one objection to that top 10 would be Russ, and I would flip Russ and move him down to number 10 and move everyone else up a spot.
Wow. Wow. I love it. Okay. I want to hear this one. Tell me. I want to hear this.
No. Well, I in the same way that I understand why people may say that Kyrie is overrated, I think that Russ is awesome, but defensively, he's really fallen off over the last few years. And offensively, I just don't know how sustainable he is as your best offensive player. Obviously, we're about to find out over 82 games. And I think that has to be factored in if you're talking about him as a top 5 player in the NBA.
For sure. And those arguments are actually some of the reasons why we wound up going with Chris Paul over him when a lot of people...
Chris Paul, that's an easy... That shouldn't be a debate.
Okay, and a lot of people felt like it was. And that was some of the biggest and harshest feedback I think we got was people thinking Westbrook over Paul. You know, based on the volume of numbers, obviously he puts up insane numbers. For me...
Yeah, like, and some of the numbers with Russ, I don't want to say he's like triple-double hunting, but they're not... they're not impressive enough for me to ignore what I see when I watch Thunder games, which is like an offense that doesn't always make a whole lot of sense, and it has to be built around him, which isn't necessarily healthy for the other guys on the floor.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, we had to kind of try to find the right balance for him because the Knox he is an impact making defensive player. But there is a cost. Mm-hmm. There's a cost to it, right? I mean, he's kind of a home run hitter on defense, where he's gonna, create his fair share of turnovers, turn them into transition buckets, kind of intimidate your point guard opposing point guard at times. But then he'll also get lost, and he'll give you some points back on that end. Offensively, our biggest beef with Russ, and the reason why we wound up kind of going for Paul over him, is that shot selection wise, he's just got way too much fat in his diet. He's taking way too many three pointers that he can't hit. Too many long twos. He does have that elbow jumper for sure, but
yeah,
there's just he trusts himself just a little bit too much at the expense of the team. The other thing that we're worried about, not only with him but some of the other Thunder players, is when you remove Durant's spacing and then also Ibaka's spacing from that team, what is that going to do to their efficiency numbers? Russ in part is able to be such an aggressive downhill player because he's got Durant on the wing sucking defenders out of there. Now that you've got right. Kyle Singler and Robertson as your wings, Russ is going to be running into a lot of great walls of China, when he gets to the paint, four guys lined up, ready to take charges and try to force turnovers. And I think that's really going to hurt his efficiency numbers a little bit. But, like, in his defense, unbelievable athlete.
In his defense, he's awesome.
Yeah,
love Russ.
Yeah, in his defense, he's awesome. Like, that's a great way to put it. Unbelievable athlete. I think he tends to get complimented by his fellow players and opposing coaches for his night-to-night consistency of effort. Not only is he available, but he's like emotionally available because he's completely all in, locked in every minute he's on the court. You can't always say that about guys even in the top 10. I think he's just going to be in a position where numbers-wise, he's just going to be able to put up dumb stats next season. And not that we're going to give somebody like a top five spot just for that, but if you can put up a stat line that basically nobody else can put up, it's really hard for us to ignore that. And James Harden's a good example. I mean, Harden's stat line was only matched in the last like 30 years by LeBron and Michael Jordan.
Look, man,
I mean, that's
you
tough.
And Rob are all about the flash. I got you. You are all in for the highlights and the stats.
No,
that's what you guys are about.
No,
I think Russ is definitely a top 10 player, top five. For some reason, there seems to be like a consensus around the league that he's in that mix, and I just don't really get it. Harden, for instance, is like, I would say probably more dependable in terms of someone you want to build an offense around and build a team around as a scorer. But last thing, so how long did you struggle with Durant versus Curry?
Well, I think Rob's had this argument with me enough about Durant to realize that he's probably just never going to get through to me, and I'm always going to be pretty locked in on number two for Durant. So we didn't argue about it as long as maybe some people would have thought, and I think that was just sort of to save his own sanity. He had Curry at two, I had Durant at two, and we wound up kind of shaking it out with Durant. The basic arguments that I made in Durant's favor are some things that we've already kind of talked about, so I'll go through them quickly. Number one, he got past the injury issues he had the previous season, and just physically he holds up really well to big minutes, high usage, and so forth. Steph, injury issues in the playoffs certainly changed the entire scope of their season and the nature of his game. We kind of felt like, Durant at 90% is going to be able to give you more than Steph at 90%. And so from that standpoint, that was one factor. Another factor is that Durant took a really big step forward defensively last year. If you look at the advanced numbers, he's got a lot of versatility there in terms of, you know, he's not necessarily like a rim protector, but he is able to be kind of an air traffic controller in the paint. He's got a lot of length. And when he locks in, he can really, really play defense. He can switch out on the perimeter. And so he's a guy who can really guard, you know, potentially 1 through 4 in screen scenarios. He can step out onto a point guard and play defense there. With Steph, you just don't have that. I think he's an improved and an underrated defensive player. But, you know, he's pretty much locked in on whoever the opposing team's worst perimeter guy is. That's who he's going to guard. And so we saw a difference there. The other thing is just the vacuum argument with Durant is that because he's so positionally versatile and because he's got so many different skill talents to him, you know, you're guaranteed pretty much an amazing offense and a good defense if he's your number one guy. With Steph, we felt like, you know, you're guaranteed a really, really, really good offense as well. But, you know, you have to have the right kind of pieces around him. Otherwise, you know, you can just kind of double him and throw the whole kitchen sink at him defensively and maybe kind of, you know, junk up that team's offense. Whereas Durant, with his size, his ability to play out of the post and do a lot of different things, I think he's got more counters. And so those were sort of the arguments that we wound up, you know, going with Durant. You know, kind of related to that last point is just the idea that we still don't think we've seen Durant at his absolute best because of the lack of systems in Oklahoma City and because of the lack of talent around him. And that if things go right in Golden State for him, we could be seeing an even more efficient version than we've seen of Durant. And he's already been like a 50-40-90 type guy at 30 points a game in his career. So to think of somebody who's, you know, demonstrably better than that, if this works out, is a really, really scary thought. And so that's sort of why we
came
back to Durant.
That's a good place to end. Really, really scary thought. That's what we have to look forward to for the season. I still cannot believe that they are on the same team. I definitely have Durant and Curry thoughts, but we've already gone too long. So on that note, let's I don't know, we'll reconvene. You're going to Europe. Will you please get an Instagram and document all these adventures of yours?
Yeah, I'll work on it.
Figure it out, man. Right. You're going to Europe. We're going to get back together and blow out NBA previews starting in early October. So look forward to that. Thank you to everyone who has listened to us all summer and everyone who got through an hour and 20 minutes of us nerding out today. Any final thoughts?
I just wanted to go back to Derek Favors for a second. No.
Perfect. Yeah. We're going to have another couple hours on Derek Favors later in the week. So look forward to that. I'll talk to you soon, man. All right.
All right, man. Congratulations on the wedding. Super happy for you.
Appreciate it. This is the best way to celebrate.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.